Good evening, everyone. This is Coach Matt, and you are listening to Better Health and Body Radio, your source for the latest and greatest information and understanding in the world of health, nutrition, and performance, where we give you a seat at the table next to the best and the brightest minds to arm you with the information you need to optimize yourself. Join us for another exciting, thought-provoking episode of BHB Radio, starting now. What's up, BHB family? This is Coach Coop. Hey, have you ever wondered, can I have my cake and eat it too? How about wine? That's right. Today, I am joined by Todd White of Dry Farm Wines to answer that question. Because let's face it, all of us, when we're on a health and fitness journey, are looking for ways to indulge in some of our favorite foods and drinks, but find ways to do it where it doesn't sabotage our progress, right? So Todd has come on today to talk about his wines, which are, by the way, zero sugar and totally natural and absolutely keto friendly. So today we're going to get into that, a bit more on his own experience through ketosis and ketones and a whole lot more. In addition to that, this episode is brought to you by Real Ketones. Real Ketones are the pioneer in the exogenous ketone space, taking it out of the clinical setting exclusively and bringing it to y'all. Exogenous ketones have a myriad of benefits, from general health and wellness optimization all the way to energy, focus, stress relief, fitness, performance, and endurance benefits, body composition benefits, blood sugar benefits, and a whole lot more. Be sure to check them out at realketones.com. In addition to that, they have a full education suite with plans, programs, and apps designed to take you from where you're at to where you want to go and make the entire process as seamless and easy as possible. So without further ado, let's get to today's show. Todd, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've had Dry Farm wines. I love them. As someone from the wine country, it's awesome to know that I can have my intersections of just, you know, health and wellness and doing what's best for myself, and then also just like the palate and tasting something delicious. Like, it's always good when those two things can meet. So for people who are listening that may not have heard of Dry Farm wines or know that there's really even an option for that, do you mind introducing yourself and what it is you do?
Yeah, so I've been a lifelong wine lover, aficionado. I live in the Napa Valley, which is the heart of the most important wine appellation in North America. I've lived here for over 20 years. Just had a lifetime love affair with wine, but about 6 years ago, I started experimenting with a therapeutic ketogenic diet, which is a very, you know, stringent form of ketogenic diet, with millimolar liters BHB between, blood tested typically for a couple of years between 1.7 and 3.2, just, you know, really high. And I experimented with it initially to break through a tiny weight loss plateau that I was trying to kind of get ripped out. But I continued after that. I've now been ketogenic for about 6 years, but I continued with a therapeutic ketogenic diet for a couple of years. And in that process, I found I couldn't process alcohol and or wine very well. I quit drinking for a while, but I didn't like that either. So I started experimenting with low alcohol wines because I thought the problem was just the alcohol. It's a very common side effect for people who get seriously committed to a ketogenic lifestyle that they have a different relationship with alcohol, difficult time processing. It's not uncommon for a lot of, you know, physiological changes to occur when you have that kind of a programmed nutrition. So I didn't know much about what was happening in the wine world. I was just drinking it. And then I discovered quite by accident, as I started looking for alternative form ways, more healthy ways to drink, I discovered the natural wine revolution, which was really underway in central France at the time. Nobody had ever heard of a natural wine. And most people today don't even know what the term means. And we'll talk about what that is. But I discovered natural wines and lower alcohol, and then started to have sort of experimentations and lab testing on wines to correlate quantifications with taste and a feel and effect. And so what I discovered is that with natural wines, which are always organic or biodynamic, so there's no chemicals in farming, they're fermented with wild native yeast as opposed to GMO lab-grown yeast for commercial wines. And then they don't have any additives. Most people don't know that wine has additives in it, but there are 76 additives approved by the FDA for the use in winemaking in the United States.
Wow, and I didn't know that at all.
Well, the reason you and your audience don't know about these 76 additives, and in fairness, some of them are natural, but many of them are quite unnatural and toxic.
Sure.
And so the reason you don't know about these 76 additives is because the wine industry has a few dirty, dark secrets, and the additives are one of them. There are others as well. But these additives are in your wine, but you don't know it because the wine industry has spent millions of dollars in lobby money in Washington, D.C. to keep contents labeling off of wine bottles. In addition to that, they have also lobbied successfully to keep nutritional information off of wine bottles. So wine is the largest, most significant food product without any kind of contents label or nutritional information.
Interesting.
So if you care about what you put in your body, which I do, obviously you do and your audience does, if you care about what you put in your body and you're a wine drinker, you don't really have any idea, unless you're buying your wine from somebody like us, a certified trusted source, you don't have any idea what you're actually drinking. So that's the ketogenic lifestyle sort of led me to a healthier wine. But then after I started to uncover what was really going on in the wine business, then, you know, that's when I started to think of, initially I wasn't looking, dry farm wines was an accidental business. I didn't go out to start dry farm wines. I went out to solve a personal problem of trying to find a healthier way to drink wine. And in that, I discovered that what was really happening in wine. And I also came to the conclusion that there were probably a few million other people like me who cared about what they're putting in their body, and that they were wine drinkers and or drinkers in general. You know, so, you know, when, and I'll pause for a moment, but when I think about drinking, I think about a conscious path to mindful drinking, right? And so if you're a biohacker, as I am, or someone who cares deeply about what I put in my body and who cares deeply about the longevity and the health span of my body and mind. Mind is, you know, is important, maybe more important than the body. If I care about my physiological process and the outcome of my biological and neurological function, right, then I need to think about alcohol. And so it surprises people to hear me say this, because they think I'm the wine guy who sells wine, which is not really necessarily the truth. What's true is that I like to educate people and help people think through things like how and why they drink and how they should drink. And so, you know, it surprises people most to hear me say the following. Alcohol is a very dangerous neurotoxin, and it ruins millions of people's lives. And there's some people who shouldn't just drink at all, right? And then there are people like me who want to drink, enjoy drinking, have no intention of stopping, but want to do it in the healthiest way possible. And part of that is lowering down the amount of alcohol, which is why we only sell and drink lower alcohol wines between 6% and 12.5%. And so, and most of the wines I drink personally are between 7 and 11%.
What's a normal number, just to give a
14 to 16%. It doesn't sound like that big of a difference, but it makes a gigantic difference in how you feel, right?
Oh yeah. I'd imagine that adds up pretty quick.
Well, you know, in the biohacking circles, and I'm sure you're aware of this because you're very active in the health community. In the biohacking and health community, there are many people who believe that tequila is the biohacking sort of alcohol of choice. And I disagree with that simply because it's 45% alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I'm trying to mitigate when I think about drinking is the amount of alcohol I consume, because we know, without any questionable doubt, we know that excessive alcohol is both damaging biologically and neurologically and can lead to neurological problems like dementia and Alzheimer's. So we know that excessive alcohol leads to these issues. And so when I think about drinking, I think about how do I get the best of both worlds? How do I get to enjoy wine, drink in an amount that I find pleasing, right? I'm not a guy who has a glass of wine. I have several.
Maybe you and me bottle, both. You and me
right?
both.
So, I mean, I don't know any drinkers. Look, I just don't know. You know, the guidelines are glass a day for women, two for men. I don't know anybody who drinks like that. And so if we're going to moderate the alcohol that we're consuming, which I think is vital for longevity and particularly for neurological health, if we're going to moderate that, I think it inherently comes from lowering the amount of alcohol in the beverage that we're drinking. And that allows us to drink more with less damage. Because again, I don't know anybody who drinks one or two glasses when they sit down. And I drink about a bottle a day. Now that's over a 3 or 4 hour period, right? And again, it's very low alcohol in my case because I don't love alcohol, but I do love wine. And I love alcohol in moderate amounts because it creates a euphoric environment. It enhances creative expression. It opens the heart and the window of the soul to sort of bond and connect with other people in moderate amounts. But alcohol is a domino drug. What that means is that the more you drink, and you probably had this experience, the more you drink, the more likely you are to drink more.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what leads to problems like interrupting your sleep, which is extremely unhealthy, you know, interrupting your sleep and then causing dehydration and, you know, other related problems with just drinking too much alcohol. So, yeah, I think a lot of people are very surprised to hear me, you know, talk about alcohol in a way that's not like super positive, right? It's always super positive if you approach it in a conscious and mindful way.
Yep, absolutely. I think that's very well said. I've always maintained that, you know, whether it's something like alcohol or people more responsibly or therapeutically using, you know, plant medicine, you know, in things like, you know, kava, kratom, things like that too. And this could also extend even to other behaviors, right? Busyness, you know, being passionate and working a lot. It's less so the thing itself that is black and white, good or bad. It's all your relationship to it, right? Like I could use alcohol as a vehicle for escapism in my life. But I could also just chew gum and look at my phone all day and accomplish the same, you know, the same thing. In terms of not being present or not taking the time to just sit and feel the feelings, right? If you want to kind of take a mindfulness spin with this. So I really like your approach with alcohol, where instead of like demonizing the thing itself, whether it's alcohol or something else, it's wait a minute. No, there is a lot of positive here. There's a bad way to use this or a less than ideal way to use it. How can we integrate this in a way that is both positive for ourselves interpersonally, and then also going to not take away from our health, fitness, and performance, right?
So I like to think of it as I don't want to drink to check out. I want to drink moderate amount of natural alcohol to tap in. Same way I would think about plant medicine, you know, it's
yes.
I don't want to necessarily depend. I want to go in with, if I'm talking about plant medicines, I'm going in with an intention. And, you know, that intention might be to drop in and to tap in, or, you know, it could be for other purposes, but really kind of, I think it's important where we think about these mind altering substances to be intentional about what we're doing and be mindful about it, right? Therefore, we can use them in a positive way to have positive impact, both to our health as well, to our mental health, you know, our biological health as well as to our neurological health, just by experiencing pleasure. I mean, I'm a self-confessed hedonist. You know, I love pleasure. But I also believe that optimal health is the greatest pleasure. And there's no greater pleasure than your health. And so I like the proverb on that, that, you know, the man who's healthy has 1,000 wishes and the man who's unhealthy only has one wish.
Yes, absolutely. I first heard that from Naval, the famous philosopher and an investor. And it's true. I mean, as someone who, and I always say this to our audience, like I don't come from a background of being fit and healthy. A lot of times you'll talk to these trainers and it's like, or these health professionals, and it's like, you know, you've kind of always genetically been solid. You don't necessarily know what it's like to be on the other side of the table here, but, you know, as someone who is not, you know, in any way genetically special, and who also had gone through times where I burnt myself out and experienced periods of, you know, low to moderate fatigue and made myself sick by following mainstream health advice. That was my only desire, was just to feel good and to be able to show up as myself and to regain that authorial intent or first person, narrative control over my own life again, you know?
Sure. And one of the things that we talk a lot about as well and think about is why high performers, when you talk about burnout, high performers tend to drink too much, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's just inherent to the way they're wired. They do everything in a big way, right? And yes. So it's, you know, and it's just high achievers are wired to tend to drink more than they should at times. So again, realizing these things and programming with intention, using products that will support your journey, right? As opposed to just being less mindful about it. But let's turn to wine for a second, because, you know, alcohol is, we could talk all day about alcohol or plant medicines or, you know, reaching euphoria in any number of different ways. But I think it's fair to educate people. I choose wine as my drink of choice for reasons I've already told you. And I believe, and I think that data is out there that wine, natural wine, real wine, is the healthiest choice of alcoholic beverages. You could argue tequila, as I mentioned earlier, but, and I agree it's clean and triple distilled and sugar-free. And I agree that it's that all of those things are true, but the problem I have with it and the reason I don't drink it is because it's 45% alcohol. And so it's just a very, very, very high dose of alcohol. But in wine, you know, I mentioned earlier, we sell and drink because we drink the same thing we sell. We drink and sell what are called natural wines. And this is very confusing to people because, you know, they think all wine is natural because that's kind of what they've been told. But for reasons I described with additives, that's not true. And also with GMO, lab cultured yeast, which is almost universally used in commercial wines. And so the other thing that's happening in commercial wines too, is that they are sterilized at the time of bottling with a massive dose of sulfur dioxide, which is an additive. And sulfur dioxide is a preservative. And in fairness, sulfur dioxide has been being used since the Romans. It's been used for a couple thousand years to preserve wine. And so it's nothing new. The question is, how much do you use and how do you treat the wine with it? And since producers are not required to disclose the use of sulfur dioxide, you don't know whether it's been used and how much. But commercial wines are sterilized with it. And what that means is that they kill all the living bacteria in the wine, and they prepare the wine for a long shelf life And the sterilization also McDonaldizes the wine. So what that means is it gets rid of any bottle-to-bottle variation. It just makes the wine very still by killing all the existing bacteria. The problem with that, one is that it kills part of the taste from these living bacteria that are inherent to any wine that hasn't been sterilized. Number two, these living bacteria, Dr. David Perlmutter, who I'm sure you're aware is New York Times bestselling author on the gut microbiome, has written several times about these bacteria that exist in natural wine and that they're friendly to the gut. And so natural wines have not been sterilized. And as a result, you can actually taste the living difference, what we call living wine. You can taste the difference in the wine. I'm sure, I know you've drank our wines and you know they're delicious and they taste different than a commercial wine.
Yeah, it was really unique.
And so, you know, here's the way we sort of think about it is if you're going to drink, and I'm going to, and if you're going to drink wine, you should be informed about what you're drinking, right? It's the same way if you went into the store and you purchased anything came in a box or a bottle, anything that came in a box or a bottle that I would purchase, the very first thing I do is look at the ingredients label and nutritional information. Unfortunately, with wine, you don't have that option. So therefore, if you're going to buy wine that you, when you care about what you're going to put in your body, you're going to have to find a trusted source who cares as much about it as you do, because you don't have the option of picking up the bottle and seeing what's in it or how much sugar's in it. You know, so when we think about dry farm wines, has a certification process that every wine must meet, and we stand behind that seal of certification. And that's organic or biodynamic farming. So no use of chemicals in farming. Dry farming, that's the name of our company. What does that mean? That means that we don't allow the use of irrigation in the farming of grapevines. There's a whole bunch of reasons for that. Irrigation is bad for the vine. It ultimately produces a less healthy fruit with fewer polyphenols, which are the healthy compounds found in wine. And it's bad for the planet. You know, we have a drought condition throughout most of the world, and certainly all across California and the West. And irrigation is just unnecessary to grow a grapevine. So anyway, we don't allow irrigation. So there's organic or biodynamic. And to cover what biodynamic farming is, it is a prescriptive advanced form of organic farming. And one of the methods used in biodynamic farming is actually farming by lunar cycle. So they believe that the moon and the tide impacts how nature relates, how plants relate to each other. So there's biodynamic farming, dry farming. We also require that all wines be sugar-free. So we do lab testing to ensure that they do not contain sugar. That's the only way you know if a wine has sugar in it, it's to lab test it. Now there's super sweet like dessert wines that obviously you can taste are super sweet. And, you know, as a result, you know, they have sugar in them, but like standard wines, you can't always taste sugar. Not even us as taste masters can taste it. It gets hidden in the acid of the wine. And so we require that the wines be sugar-free. Also that they are 12.5% or below in alcohol. Mm-hmm. And while most people don't consider the amount of alcohol in a wine bottle and rarely look at the bottle to see how much is in it, but it's another conspiracy between collusion between the wine industry and the government. The alcohol stated on a wine bottle by law is not required to be accurate.
Interesting.
And so if you care about alcohol, looking on the bottle doesn't do anything for you, because it may very well not even be accurate and is not required to by law. So then we do also independent lab testing for sulfites. And sulfites come both naturally occurring. All wines contain sulfite, whether sulfur dioxide has been added or not. What we're looking for is to make sure that excess amounts of sulfur dioxide have not been added to the wine. So these are, we are also testing for other things like pH and specific types of sugars and so on and so forth. But we put a seal of certification on every single wine that says this wine is additive-free, organically grown, sugar-free, and is lower in alcohol.
Interesting. Yeah, that, I didn't realize. I mean, I could have imagined to some extent knowing bits about the food industry and in my time, but I had no idea there are all these ifs, ands, buts, and what have yous when it comes to the wine industry. I mean, it sounds fairly similar to how, you know, for example, the FDA, pharmaceutical companies are allowed to give money, you know, donate money to the very body that's supposed to be regulating them. And then that's how some of this stuff, you know, seems to come to fruition, at least if you kind of read between the lines. So speaking of, go ahead.
No, is this going to the government? You know, I'm not a conspiratist. I don't, you know, there's a lot of crazy stuff that's being said in the world today that I don't believe, but
sure.
One thing we know for sure is that, you know, when we look at the government and where nutritional information is concerned or our health, there's just a tremendous amount of misinformation there. That is just obviously true.
Yeah.
You don't need to go far, but to look at my plate or what used to be the food pyramid, which is designed and developed and managed by the agricultural department, right? And so the agricultural department's role, their primary role in life, in addition to telling you what you should eat, is selling grains, right? And so there's just too much. There's a lot of conflict between information and science and the goals that these folks have in the world of, you know, what they do day to day. So obviously the agricultural department, as I said, who produces the food recommendations for Americans, also their primary job is selling grain on behalf of farmers. So if you believe that processed grains are unhealthy and most of them contain glyphosate or have been genetically and most have been genetically modified to be tolerant to glyphosate, if you believe that, which I think is pretty well established, then I don't want to be getting my food recommendations from the mere people who are in charge of selling this poisonous grain.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. I mean,
I'm not a conspirator. That part is pretty straightforward.
Yeah, you know, I've heard a saying one time, don't ask the barber if you need a haircut, right?
Right.
You and I rock our hair pretty short anyways, but, you know, it's just what your definition of the word conspiracy is, right? Like flat earth, for example, right? That like, you know, faking the moon landings, those kind of things are conspiracies. You know, corporate interest is just a reality. And so I think that if we're going to deny that that exists, or people are going to deny that that exists, it's, you know, if there's a word for conspiracy theorists, right? There should be a word for the exact opposite of that. And that would be, you know, I think coincidentalists, right?
Yeah, I don't think that people who care about nutrition have their head in the sand about that topic. But
exactly.
But yeah, so you were going to ask me something?
Yes. So you mentioned zero sugar, right? So not only are you, you know, very well versed on, you know, the wine industry, the wine business, alcohol, but part of solving your own need came from a point of, you know, wanting to be healthier. And that includes the ketogenic diet, right? I know you've spoken on that quite a bit on, you know, show appearances, conferences, things like that. You know, what has the ketogenic diet done for you personally? And just kind of what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I mean, I've been a biohacker for before the term biohacker even existed, and I didn't realize it. I was just in pursuit of optimal performance and longevity and anti-aging and all the things I cared and staying lean, which was important to me. And I have the body type that probably about 85% of humans have, which is I'm carbohydrate intolerant. And so for me, I had used the ketogenic diet for many years. Well, it was really the Atkins diet, which I would call modified keto, that I started with in the 1980s or very early 90s. And, you know, as a way to control my weight but didn't get serious about the science until about 6 years ago when I started a therapeutic ketogenic diet, when I started doing blood testing and sort of, you know, really dialing into the science of it. But as a practical matter, I also only eat once a day. I've been eating one meal per day now for just over 4 years. For 2 years prior to that, I was eating two meals a day on the 16-8 window, 16 hours of fasting, eating two meals in the 8 hour window. And then I went to a one meal a day, which I eat around 6 o'clock at night. And between that meal and the next meal, I have light green tea and water only is all that I take in between meals. And so for me, it was both sanity and vanity. The same reason I work out, you know, it's both really for sanity, mental health, and then for vanity, because I want to kind of play this thing out and feel and look great as long as I can.
Sure.
And so, for me, ketogenic diet really profoundly impacted my memory, profoundly, particularly short-term memory, profoundly impacted my cognitive performance and focus, which is why I experimented for such a long time with what I call therapeutic ketosis, which I'm not on today. Today, I'm on what I would call a modified ketogenic diet. I go into nutritional ketosis daily, no matter what my sin of last night may have been. I have a very strict diet. The only thing that I eat that I consider off program is potatoes, and I eat them in moderation just because I happen to like potato.
Sure.
It's just a thing. I just happen to like it. And so I do eat potatoes, but in moderation. And everything else I eat is clean protein or vegetables. And, I don't deviate. I don't eat bread or any kind of grains or corn or rice or, you know, anything that would be offensive to the ketogenic diet. And I don't eat refined sugar ever, like in any form. I don't eat condiments. I don't eat salad dressings. I don't eat not commercial dressings or dressings that I haven't made. Most everything contains sugar in it. I don't drink any kind of beverages that contain sugar, not even in low amounts. I just find that sugar is a slippery slope. It's an addictive domino drug, much like cocaine or alcohol. You start eating it and it just triggers you and you want to eat more of it. So for me, it's just best not to eat it at all. You know, I was in the beta program for Levels, which is a relatively new continuous glucose monitor. I've also worn the Dexcom before. I don't wear continuous glucose monitors on a regular basis. They're designed for diabetics, of course, but biohackers are wearing them. I don't wear it often because two reasons. One, I don't really need it because my diet doesn't deviate enough to impact my blood sugar. And my blood sugar is very stable and very, very low because of my diet. And number two, the sensors are not friendly to heat. And I have a hot tub and an infrared sauna and a steam room at my house. And I'm constantly in a cold plunge. I'm constantly in extreme forms of heat and cold. And so the sensors don't work very well. And so if I am experimenting with a CGM, then I need to stay out of these hot and cold environments so it works kind of properly. But for me, I have a desire to, I'm 60 and I'm really thinking about the next 50 years. And in particular, I think setting up for the next 50 years, I think the next 10 years will be the most critical between 60 and 70. And I'm in top physical best condition of my life. You know, I'm the leanest I've ever been. That's important to me, both from a health and vanity point of view. And so that's sort of how the ketogenic diet and intermittent fasting, and I do extended fast from 3 to 7 days, about once a month or once every 6 weeks. And that's water only for 3 to 7 days, depending upon what kind of mood I'm in or what my schedule will allow. But I do a minimum of 3 days. And then, of course, intermittent fasting every day and have been and will never return to eating more than once per day just because I feel so great. So what I was saying is, even if I had some sin of last night, you know, bunch of potatoes as an example or something like that. Because I only eat once per day by 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon at the latest, I'll be back in nutritional ketosis or really driven by starvation. But
right. Well, and that's interesting you say that too, because the ketogenic diet was actually invented initially as a way to mimic nutritional ketosis in patients, you know, sick children, epileptic children who could not follow or were not willing to follow fasting protocols. And so I think that, you know, what you brought up there, right, there is with the potatoes and everything, there is wiggle room here, because there are people, myself included, who I have days when I'm at rest, when I'm relaxing, when I'm just walking the dog, where I, you know, I'm eating a higher amount of protein than a typical ketogenic diet. I am doing some iteration of fasting. But at the same time, you know, that's like a lower carb, probably higher fat day for me. And then I've got, you know, a couple days where I'm engaging in strength training, where I'm using primarily, you know, my type 2A and B fast twitch muscle fibers, which are going to use a higher amount of carbs. So I can have higher amount of carbs those days and then still be back into ketosis like most of the time.
Yeah, Mark Sisson talks a lot. He and I have been friends for several years since he became, you know, huge proponent of our wines. But, you know, he thinks and writes and talks a lot about metabolic flexibility. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and I think that's probably true. It's for me, I do also interval training. I do high intensity or I do low long range cardio, you know, always mixing it up to try and keep some variation on everything. There's certain foods I don't eat, right? Ever.
Sure.
Like
sure.
Refined sugars, corn. Right. Corn has got all kinds of problems, both from a keto point of view as well as, you know, GMO and glyphosate.
Agreed.
I don't eat grains, and I don't eat rice. There are a few things I just don't eat because it's not these types of foods for me and my body will lead to a overindulgence. I start eating these refined carbs like that, I'll just want to eat more of them.
Right.
And it triggers something in my brain. And if I don't eat them, then I don't want them, but I start eating them, then I want it. If I start to have, you know, a bowl of rice, I want to have three.
Right. Yeah.
It's just what it does to me. And then that definitely throws my program out. And 1 or 2 days of cheat, if you will, on these things that I just don't eat. Mm-hmm. And I pick up a pound or two and I start to feel sluggish. And
yeah.
I mean, it's immediate for me. And it's become, the older I've gotten, the more immediate it has become. So, and the more dramatic the change to my body, and the change is quicker.
Right.
So I just have to be very careful if I want to maintain, you know, when I think about aging, I think of something that I call PSFB, which is power, strength, flexibility, and balance, right? And so I think flexibility and balance are very important as you age, and then power and strength as well. And so I think a lot about that as I think about longevity and aging is staying focused on those kind of four things.
Yeah. I mean, that's very well said. I hadn't actually ever heard that before, but as someone who does work with people both on the nutrition side and then also on the training side, I think that's, you know, if you were to really kind of like boil down, sift out everything else and just give people the blueprint for healthy aging, it's maintaining that skeletal muscle mass, strength, and the neurological coordination required to do it. And then, you know, your mobility and or flexibility, as you put it. And then a lot of the proprioceptive control over the body, right? Your body control and reflexology, essentially.
So, yeah. And I think extreme temperatures are really, really interesting. I am a huge proponent of both infrared sauna and cold plunge and the use of them together.
Yes.
It's quite remarkable, but you know, so for me, just, I really wanted to stay like to have this shape and power. And I really wanted to sort of you know, continue that in my life. And for me, that was just about eating less and less often. Mm-hmm. And it's been a very successful formula for me personally. In addition to, you know, I drink a lot of natural wine, of course. This keeps me young and certainly makes me a lot more fun. But yeah, so, you know, it just, for me, I just, the ketogenic, while I'm not like, I went through a phase, as did a bunch of my coworkers and friends, you know, four or five years ago when keto got really, really kind of popping inside the biohacking community. I mean, it was everybody doing, we were doing blood testing. We were posting our blood tests to social, you know, who had the highest BHB. And, you know, I'm sure you've been through that or seen people do that.
Yeah, of course.
You know, we were kind of in competition to see how high we could get, you know, a readout on a glucometer, you know, for ketones. And I don't think that was kind of a crazy time. I don't think that way anymore. I rarely measure. The only time I measure the beta hydroxybutyrate in my blood now, which is a couple of times a year, is if I want to experiment with a food type. Like right. if I want to see, you know, if I want to see how many French fries I can eat without going out, you know, if I want to experiment with food, I might measure then to see what kind of impact it has, you know, both on blood sugar as well as ketone bodies.
Right.
But the other thing is it relates to blood sugar we were talking about earlier. And I think I'm from the school of belief, as many biohackers are, that most modern chronic health conditions that many lead to eventual death before they give you a couple decades of suffering, that most of these chronic diseases are related to the hyperproduction of insulin and the very powerful hormone that both keeps us alive but then can kill us as well. Unfortunately, the death is not sudden, where an unhealthy diet is concerned, it leads to these, you know, chronic health diseases that cause us to suffer for a couple of years before a slow death. But in thinking about maintaining blood sugar, which is related to, you know, if you look at your blood sugar and your ketone production, if you're interested in the ketogenic diet, you're going to see that they're inverted. So typically the higher your ketones get, the lower your blood sugar will go. And I mean, if you're intentioning with a diet, but one thing interesting about if you want to control blood sugar and talk about eating potatoes, or if you want to have a ketogenic diet and talk about eating something like potatoes or even rice or any kind of high refined carbohydrate is how you layer the food, right? So if I sat down and just ate, you know, a bunch of French fries, I would have a very different blood sugar effect than if I layered it after eating some protein and fats and rough vegetables.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, when we're food combining, that's going to have a big impact because we know fat and fiber both mitigate glycemic response.
Yeah.
So, you know, how we kind of layer food matters as to what kind of result we get from it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a lot of people in the generative energy, Dr. Ray Peake community talk about it, that as well. And actually both they, that community, and then also at Real Ketones, like their ethos is just to kind of boomerang back to what you closed the loop on what you said a second ago. They definitely believe, hey, if you want to look at your blood sugar, you know, if you want to track ketones, you know, feel free, but they want to make this whole like more ancestral based lifestyle, ketones, things like that, a lot more easy and approachable, and then also flexible. Like, you know, our mutual acquaintance Mark Sisson would say as well. And so their whole thing there is really, and Dr. Mike T. Nelson, who I had on, also echoed this, and that's that, you know, metabolic flexibility, the ability to shift more towards burning fat when you need it, and carbs when you need it too, if you're, you know, depending on the person, of course. That's really the main feature of ketosis. And then kind of endlessly chasing the, you know, measuring the number of ketones, it's a little bit tough because the amount of ketones you have in your system are a transient state, right? So I think that I just wanted to hit on the fact that the flexibility is important. I myself tend to do best when I have some days when I'm in a deeper state of ketosis and adaptive that way. And then other days, and I also get additional ketone presence from exogenous ketones to do things like promote neurological health. I know we've been talking about that a lot with respect to alcohol. And then also even for blood sugar too, among many, many other things. But, you know, anyways, I guess the point being is that I think that there's framework here, and then there's wiggle room in there too. And it doesn't, the ketogenic diet, having ketones in your body, doesn't have to be this rigid, super strict approach necessarily. And although that, you know, by that can work better for certain people. Absolutely. You know?
Yeah. It's, gosh, it's just a fascinating topic, but you know, we're all learning and sort of taking it one day at a time. And unfortunately there's not as much science as we would like.
Right.
So it's a lot anecdotal and sort of how you feel. And, you know, I love the proverb, to feel is to understand. You know, when you're in touch with your body, you can feel, and your right. mind, you can feel how exogenous compounds of any kind of food makes you feel, you know. And if you just listen to your body, then it'll guide you pretty much where you need to go. If you're listening and can be aware of it.
Yeah. I like to call that concept mindful, like with two L's.
Nice.
It's like, through, I think, also a combination of mindfulness, traditional stuff like meditating, and then also, you know, as you do, you know, things like experiment with paleo, keto, some of the Ray Peet stuff, things like that, you kind of end up getting yourself to a place of body intuition, which I think goes hand in hand with kind of, you know, mental, spiritual, intuition as well. And like you said, you get immediate feedback from your body. So whether it's a supplement like exogenous ketones I was talking about, making me feel more euphoric, have more energy, help me perform better in the gym, my clients as well, or whether it's a certain food like wheat and gluten, for example, giving me a negative feedback loop, or a traditional alcoholic drink making me feel inflamed and sluggish, and, you know, my gut having issues. It's just interesting how you take the time to just listen to what your body's telling you, all this food and all that's information. You know, you brought up a great point too. You know, you said, I just have a slippery slope. Some of these foods that I really crave, that maybe I are not ideal when I eat them, I want to eat more. And I think that's probably some constellation of what's going on in your brain, pleasure response wise, and then also your gut health, right? When you have certain gut bacteria growing, right? It wants to, almost like an invasive species in the wild, it wants to repopulate itself. So it's going to make you crave more of whatever it is to make you, make you eat more of it, ideally. But yeah, Todd, I want to be respectful of your time here. So if people want to try your wines, Dry Farm Wines, if they want to learn more, where can they go to do that?
Well, they're, we are Dry Farm Wines on all social media and dryfarmwines.com. But we also have a special gift for your listeners. If they go to dryfarmwines.com, Real Ketones, they'll find an offering for a penny bottle of wine. And so we just can't give wine away for free, so we charge a penny for it.
Oh, wow.
So they can find that offer, and I'm sure you'll put a link in the show notes. But we're easy to find. We're known as the keto wine. We're known as the paleo wine. We're known as kind of the healthy wine. So we're super easy to find all over social, and we only sell wines direct to consumers. So we don't sell our wines through restaurants or retailers. It's 100% shipped to your door. You have to order it online from our website or from the link I just gave you. And we would love to share some of our keto, paleo, healthy, friendly, delicious, low alcohol, lab tested wines with your audience. So yeah, feel free to order, or if we can be of service in any way, reach out to us. We're easy to find.
Awesome. And that's dryfarmwines.com/realketones, right? And I can link to that in the show notes.
That's correct. Yeah, that's right.
Excellent. Yeah. You know, it's almost like the wine version of have your cake and eat it too, right? You can be healthy and you can drink your wine.
It's true. You'll see, you know, what we tell people is that you will immediately taste and feel a difference. I just was at Lance Armstrong's house last Thursday night for dinner in Aspen, and was a guest on his podcast the next day. But, you know, and Lance drinks a lot of wine, and he has a big wine cellar in his house. And when we were drinking, he was like, oh, wow, you know, you can really feel the difference in this. I mean, just while you're drinking, you know, just the buzz is more energized. It's just lighter, fresher, just better.
Yeah.
And he was really amazed by that. And then, of course, we did the podcast the next morning, and they all came in. I told them, you're going to feel great tomorrow, no matter how much wine you drink tonight. And they did. And it was a great testimony around that. But yeah, so you can taste and feel a real difference. And we also have 100% happiness promise. And what that means is if there's any wine you don't like for any reason, we'll send you a replacement or give your money back. No questions asked. Right. It's just, that's how committed we are to both the taste and the outcome of drinking these exceptional natural products that are whole and real. And so there's no risk. So please join us. We'd love to share our mission with you. And I appreciate you having me on today.
Of course. Yeah. It's been my pleasure. All right, everybody. That has been one of my favorite episodes of BHB Radio. That was a lot of fun, and I learned a ton too. So I hope you guys did as well. And I will be sure to connect you guys with Todd and all things Dry Farm, so you guys can feel and taste the difference for yourselves. Take care.